Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity is a nonfiction relationship book by psychotherapist Esther Pirl. Framed as a cultural and psychological examination of affairs, it challenges the idea that infidelity can be understood only as moral failure or simple betrayal. Pirl argues that cheating often reveals deeper tensions around desire, identity, intimacy, loneliness, and the expectations placed on modern partnership. Drawing on her clinical experience with couples, she explores why affairs happen, why they hurt so profoundly, and why they remain such a persistent feature of long-term relationships. The book is not a manual for preventing betrayal or a step-by-step recovery guide. Instead, it aims to broaden the conversation by bringing nuance, compassion, and realism to a topic that is usually discussed in black and white terms. Its purpose is to help readers think more carefully about monogamy, secrecy, longing, and the possibility of repairing relationships after rupture. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, infidelity is a symptom of longing, not only wrongdoing. A central claim of the book is that infidelity is often driven by longing rather than simple dissatisfaction or cruelty. Pirl does not excuse betrayal, but she resists reducing it to a single motive. Affairs may emerge when a person feels unseen, diminished, trapped, lonely, or disconnected from parts of the self that once felt alive. This framing matters because it moves the discussion away from blame alone and toward understanding what the affair was trying to express. In Pirl's view, cheating can expose unmet needs that were already present in the relationship or in the individual psyche. That does not make the act harmless, but it does make it more intelligible. The book, therefore, treats infidelity as a relationship event and an identity event at the same time. By doing so, it asks readers to consider not only what was broken, but what was desired, suppressed, or lost before the betrayal occurred. Secondly, why betrayal wounds so deeply even when the relationship survives, Pirl gives special attention to the emotional force of betrayal. She shows that an affair is not painful only because a rule was broken. It is devastating because it shakes a person's sense of reality, security, and uniqueness in the relationship. For the betrayed partner, the injury often includes humiliation, confusion, and the collapse of trust in both the other person and the shared story of the marriage or partnership. The book is careful to show that these wounds are not purely intellectual. They affect self-worth, attachment, and the body's sense of safety. At the same time, Pirl acknowledges that love and betrayal can coexist, which is part of what makes the aftermath so complex. A relationship may still contain commitment, history, and affection even after deception. This tension is one of the book's most important insights. The fact of an affair does not automatically erase all existing love, but it does change the conditions under which love must now be negotiated. Thirdly, secrecy, desire, and the hidden architecture of affairs. Another major theme is the role of secrecy. Pirl examines how affairs depend on concealment and how secrecy intensifies both the erotic charge and the moral danger of betrayal. The hidden nature of an affair creates a split life where one person is managing two realities at once. This divide can fuel excitement, but it also generates anxiety, distortion, and disconnection from ordinary relational accountability. Pirl uses this dynamic to explore why affairs can feel so consuming and why they often become difficult to end. She also considers how secrecy changes the meaning of desire itself. What is hidden may seem more vivid, more urgent, or more authentic than the familiar life at home. Yet the book does not romanticize this process. Instead, it shows how secrecy can substitute intensity for intimacy and fantasy for honest connection. By analyzing the mechanics of concealment, Pirl reveals that affairs are not just emotional accidents. They are structured by choices, omissions, and the management of truth. Fourthly, monogamy is a cultural ideal under pressure. Pirl situates infidelity inside broader cultural expectations about monogamy. She questions the assumption that lifelong exclusivity is easy, natural, or uniformly understood. The book suggests that modern couples are often asked to satisfy multiple emotional and erotic demands through one relationship, while also maintaining ideals of equality, companionship, passion, and personal fulfillment. Those expectations can create pressure that makes betrayal easier to conceal and harder to interpret. Pirl does not argue against monogamy, but she does insist that its assumptions deserve scrutiny. She asks whether people are prepared for the emotional demands that the monogamous ideal places on them, and whether some of the pain around affairs comes from an unrealistic belief that commitment should eliminate desire elsewhere. This cultural lens distinguishes the book from purely moral or therapeutic accounts. It treats infidelity not only as an individual problem, but as a revealing symptom of how contemporary relationships are organized, imagined, and burdened by competing ideals. Lastly, repair after affairs and the possibility of a new relationship. The book is notable for refusing a simple ending to the story of infidelity. Pyrrhal argues that some relationships can survive an affair, but survival requires more than deciding to stay together. It demands truth-telling, emotional work, and a willingness to confront what the affair exposed about the original relationship. In that sense, recovery is not a return to the previous version of the partnership. It is often the construction of something different, with clearer boundaries, deeper honesty, or a revised understanding of desire and commitment. Pyrrhal is realistic about how difficult this process is, and she does not present healing as guaranteed. Still, she insists that an affair can become a turning point rather than only an ending. This perspective is valuable because it broadens the reader's imagination. The choice after betrayal is not simply separation or denial. There may be a third path involving grief, accountability, and deliberate rebuilding, even if that rebuilding leads to a transformed relationship rather than the old one restored. In conclusion, the state of affairs. Rethinking infidelity will be most useful for readers trying to understand betrayal without flattening it into slogans. That includes people who have experienced infidelity directly, couples deciding whether repair is possible, and therapists or counselors who want a more nuanced framework for discussing affairs. Its practical value lies in helping readers separate moral judgment from emotional analysis, which can make painful situations easier to examine honestly. Its intellectual value comes from the way it connects personal behavior to larger questions about desire, monogamy, secrecy, and the cultural demands placed on intimate partnerships. Compared with many relationship books, it stands out for its refusal to offer quick fixes or simple blame. Pyrrhal combines clinical insight with cultural criticism, so the book is not just about how affairs happen, but about what affairs reveal about modern love. Readers looking for a conventional recovery guide may find it less prescriptive than expected, but those seeking depth, perspective, and language for difficult realities will find it unusually thoughtful and humane. If you would like to support Esther Pyrrhal, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.